to order. Just a second here. Councilor Foley, would you please say the prayer?
Grant us, O God, perception and patience, that justice, truth, and honesty may be evident in our planning and our governing. Make us aware of the needs of each part of this town of Caledon. Save us from a parochialism that divides, and so create in us a desire for progress and responsible action, that all our words and deeds may be in accord with thy will, to the glory of thy holy name. Amen.
Please stay standing for O Canada. To decide if I should keep these on. I don't need them for reading, but anyway, there's a summary of addendum items. We have an added delegation material, and we have added correspondence. So I have a motion moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli, that the agenda for the October 7th, 2014 council meeting be approved as amended. All those in favor? It's carried. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? I'm going to declare, because I think it keeps it cleaner that way, on a piece of correspondence, or it's a petition. It's a petition on my street, so even though I asked them to leave my name off of it, my name's on it, so I shall, when we get to, it's for receipt, so... I shall not sit at the table when we receive it. Okay? Thank you. And there is no closed meeting. Council workshop introduction. Okay, that first page went by quickly. Okay, we'll start right in with the delegations. We have Mark Wallace, our deputy fire chief.
Good morning, Madam Mayor, members of council. I have a good news story for you today. We have a project here, it's called Project Assist. It's to support firefighter training throughout Ontario. Enbridge Gas Distribution Inc. teamed up with the Fire Marshal's Public Fire Safety Council to help fire and emergency services throughout Ontario to purchase firefighter training materials. Project Assist is designated to supplement existing training for Ontario Fire Departments in the communities where Enbridge operates. This year's $100,000 donation will be shared by 20 Ontario Fire Departments, including the Town of Caledon Fire and Emergency Services. Funds will be used to purchase educational materials to enhance life-saving firefighting techniques. On behalf of the Caledon Fire and Emergency Services and the Fire Chief, I would like to thank Enbridge Distribution Inc. and the Fire Marshal's Public Fire Safety Council for this generous opportunity. With us today is Manny Sousa and Curtis Fink from the Enbridge Gas Distribution Inc. and Denise Wallace, Program Specialist from the Office of the Fire Marshal and Emergency Management, representing the Fire Marshal's Public Fire Safety Council. They are here today. And Mr. Sousa would like to take a few words and opportunity to speak.
Welcome, Mr. Sousa.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. I had a script, and I'm going to keep it short and go off script, because this project actually came as a result of a few years ago when two volunteer firefighters lost their lives in a fire. And I remember talking to the Fire Safety Council, Art Poland, said, we got to come up with something that can help them, whether it's training or materials or something. So we put our heads together, and out came Project Assist. 85% of the fire departments in Ontario are volunteer or composite fire departments, and I figured this is one way that in many communities, $5,000 is a lot of money for training materials. So we developed this about 2 years ago, and now we've probably assisted close to 80 fire departments across Ontario. So we're proud of this program, but we're also proud of working with the local fire departments and as well as municipalities. So thank you very much for letting us be a part of this.
Well, on behalf of our municipality, we'd like to thank you very much and thank Enbridge, because all of this helps a great deal towards our fire department and training and all of that sort of thing that's so necessary to keep our residents safe. So your contribution and being part of that is really appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank
it's
you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, we'll go to our next delegation, Eric Baldwin, Senior Conservation Lands Planner, and Judy Orendorf, the Director of Lands and Natural Heritage for Credit Valley Conservation.
Good morning, Madam Mayor, members of Council. Through you, Madam Mayor, today Credit Valley Conservation would like to provide a progress report on two management planning activities that are underway in Caledon at our Bell Fountain Conservation Area and the Upper Credit Conservation Area. We have a short slideshow that we'd like to present to Council today. Eric Baldwin, our Senior Land Planner, will be making that presentation. Thank you.
Madam Mayor and Council, thanks for inviting us to speak today. We welcome the opportunity to speak to Council about a couple of CVC master planning projects within the town, notably at Upper Credit and Bell Fountain Conservation Areas. Before we get into any details about those two specific properties, a very quick overview of why CVC would complete master planning projects. For us, a master plan or a management plan is the conservation area equivalent of a municipal zoning bylaw. Without appropriate zoning permitted uses, development can appear unplanned, user conflicts will increase, and all while we don't achieve our main mandate, which is protection and appreciation of the natural environment. Master plans are not completed for the sake of change. At CVC, we have a system of 58 conservation areas throughout the watershed, and planning is prioritized based on health and safety concerns, environmental concerns, visitor use levels, visitor use conflict issues, and infrastructure needs. We also have most master plans that are required by some form of legislation or funding requirements or funding agreements. As an example, Bell Fountain is part of the Niagara Escarpment Parks and Open Space System, and as part of Part 3 of the Niagara Escarpment Plan, all public agencies that own lands within the system are required to do master plans. They're required to do them if they want to get any approval to do any type of development or recreation planning. Upper Credit is an example where master planning is required because of the funding agreement. The property has been acquired with a variety of funding sources from agencies like Ducks Unlimited Canada, the Nature Conservancy, as well as the Region of Peel as a major funder. And most of those agencies require us to do some form of master planning. Master planning also provides a more efficient and effective land management. It allows agencies like CVC to direct our resources to the proper locations, whether it's from staffing or infrastructure planning. And that brings me to the last point. It allows us to do long-term investment planning. As you can imagine, with 58 parks, we have a system of 10 core conservation areas, four of which are operational and have staff. There's a lot of infrastructure needs at those parks, and the budgets required to implement those infrastructure needs are significant. First, I'll take you through the Upper Credit Conservation Area. For those that aren't familiar, it's a 400-acre conservation area just northwest of Alton, northeast of Alton, and it stretches just outside the village all the way north to Orangeville. It's been acquired with many funding sources, Ducks Unlimited Canada, Nature Conservancy, Region Appeal, Ontario Heritage Trust are just a few. The goal is to connect the green space between Alton and Orangeville, and to facilitate that process, we have a green list securement strategy, but we also have a master planning process that began in 2013. We've had extensive work done on this to date. We expect publication of the final approved management plan in early 2015. And to give you an idea, we've had two public consultations completed to date, and a third is expected before we publish the final plan. Some of the feedback we've received through the consultation on Upper Credit is visitors love the rural character of the property. They love the excellent trail system. Dogs off leash, some love it, others do not. And finally, most people find it's thoroughly satisfying that CBC is doing a fantastic job of protecting the significant environmental features in the north part of the watershed. So some of the directions that are coming out of the consultation is enforce off-leash regulations. It's not in CBC's mandate to provide off-leash services, and a vast majority of our parks are not the ideal locations to provide this type of service. We are looking in the future to perhaps provide this service at other conservation areas, most notably if we acquire any rehabilitated pits and quarries. They also want to enhance the natural features with grassland projects, grassland restoration and forest management projects. One of those is underway. If you've visited the property recently, you will notice that part of the property is planted with soybean. It is a precursor to planting grassland projects. We're working on a pavilion, secondary accesses, an improved trail system as part of the property, all of which would be part of the Credit Valley Trail. And implementation is hopeful to begin in 2015. So at Upper Credit, this is just a brief summary of some of the projects. It gives you an idea of the trail system, some of the infrastructure projects that are planned, and some of the enhancements that are planned as well. So if I can move on to Bell Fountain Conservation Area, it's a 140-acre complex of properties. It's Bell Fountain Conservation Area, which most people are familiar with. We have the Cox property, also owned by CBC. That is the small triangular property highlighted in green. And then we also have the Willoughby property, which is owned by the Ontario Heritage Trust, but managed by CBC. It's been an active recreation area since the early 1900s when Charles Mack purchased the property. And it's still a regional destination with natural, cultural, and social significance in the area. At the site, there's a lot of aging infrastructure, and the visitor experience, albeit quite good and receives a lot of visitors, there are a number of improvements that could be had at the property. Of course, we also have a process that is desperately needed, a class environmental assessment for the dam and head pond in terms of what are the best management options for that site. So to start off, this is just a visual of the dam and head pond structure at the conservation area that we're looking at. The process, we've just received bids on an RFP to complete the environmental assessment, and we hope that that actual assessment process will begin late this year and perhaps be completed by the end of 2015 or early 2016. To give an example of health and safety issues and aging infrastructure, if people have visited the park, they're very aware of our terrace at Bell Fountain Conservation Area, and here's a picture of at least the small section of it. It looks good from the surface, but if you start to look at the wrought iron fence around it, you can see the fence is cracking. And if you look around the stone facing on the outer edges of it, you can see even more cracks that are starting to form in this terrace. And what you can see, just to give you some scale, and to give you an idea of the time frame of this, these gaps have all opened up in the last year, 12 to 18 months. So as a result, this terrace is actually closed to the public. It's off limits until we can find a solution to restore it. We also have other areas of opportunity in the park. You're looking at the upper part of the park with our maintenance building, and there's other opportunities. If you take a look at a wider view of it, There, on the horizon, there's an old septic system that needs to be replaced. But there's a variety of opportunities to help us improve the visitor experience at the park. There's also ways to help us improve accessibility. These stairs take us down to the lower part of the park. You can obviously tell that they are far from accessible. There's ways that we can make it easier for all of the residents of Caledon and within the region to visit and enjoy the park. But there's also other areas that are far too accessible. This is the Bank of the West Credit. We can make some improvements. Yes, it's a great experience. It's one of the main experiences that people go to the park to have, is actually have some tactile touching experience with the river. But as you can imagine, some of the damage and impacts to the Bank of the Credit are pretty significant, so trying to manage that as well. We also have picnic areas that, again, aren't overly accessible, but we have opportunities to define them better and provide a better experience, separate the groups, eliminate user conflicts. We also have issues with washrooms available in lower parts of the park, again, with accessibility issues. If you made it to the lower part of the park, you'd have to walk up to the top of the park to go to the washroom. So we have opportunities to enhance existing infrastructure to provide additional services. So we have a number of project areas that we're working on throughout the park, and these are just areas with common themes with them, whether it's cultural themes, picnic themes, access to the Credit River, that are all being discussed as part of a management plan, and it helps us prioritize our work and set schedules for implementation. But we have to get it through our planning process first, and our planning process began in 2013. We have a stakeholder advisory committee, which was established in early 2014. We meet monthly with the exception of the summer. Those meetings are slated to begin again later this week. And it includes designated reps from all partners, including groups like the Bell Fountain Community Organization, local agencies, Town of Caledon, Region of Peel, et cetera. And all existing feedback has been relatively supportive, and people understand the issues at the park, and we're just trying to take it through the rest of the process. So we hope to complete the master plan in spring, summer of 2015, complete the class environmental assessment by the end of 2015, early 2016, with an implementation through 2015 to 17. And we're calling it our Bell Fountain Century Project. And the reason we call it that is because Charles Mack, we believe, opened the property he purchased it in 1908, started opening it up to the public in and around 1914 to 1916. So once this reinvigoration of the park is complete, we hope to have a rather large celebration of the completion of the project, which would roughly match with the 100 year anniversary of the park. So I'll leave it open to questions.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd just like to say that with regards to the Upper Credit conservation and trying to link the trails, that there is a fundraiser coming up on October the 17th, and it's an evening in paradise. I think, and the reason for that is a fundraiser to try and raise money for land acquisition. So that's a positive. I know I'm a hostess for it. I don't know if I have to serve food and everything, but I think I'm greeting people at the door. So that should be very interesting. Councillor Paderak.
Thank you, Eric, and good to see you, Judy, as well. And on the Upper Credit, certainly it is very, very popular. And it's popular. You identified one of the key issues in relation to dogs. And I wonder if one of the things we might consider would be having some trail loops that are identified as off-leash loops. And the rest of the park, like when you get in the back or to the east, that you have a lot of loops, and you could create more loops and say these are off-leash loops, and people would identify that. Otherwise, they have to have their dogs. And as a regular user of the park with my dog, who only weighs, when she's fit, 17 pounds, mm-hmm. There are some aggressive dogs that are always off-leash, and many people have had negative experience with those owners. I don't know why they persist in, because they have not altercations, but difficulties every time they're in the park. But aside from that, it's wonderful to see the progress that's being made. I look forward to the McElwraith property being opened, and I would look, if I'm reelected, would look to becoming more aggressive in actually somehow filling in the few gaps we have. Right from the bottom of Dominion Road to Orangeville, there's only really a few hundred meters that isn't in public ownership or public access. So we just have to go that little bit, and we could have a trail that connects the Forks of the Credit right up into Orangeville, and, or Orangeville to the Forks of the Credit one way or the other. So I look forward to that. Bell Fountain is a little bit more contentious, but before I get into that, I would suggest, has anyone ever approached the CVC about the possibility of having at least some of the stonework receive a heritage designation?
Through you, Madam Mayor, we haven't been approached to officially designate any features within the site. We know there's interest in the community to perhaps designate the entire community either as a heritage district or a heritage landscape. Obviously, the Bell Fountain Conservation Area would be part of that. We would have to wait and see how the municipality would want to go about that process and what the specifics of the language would be.
The specific designation would enable, it's not a lot of money, but on an annual basis, if you were able to match, there would be could be $4,000 that would come to the CVC to repair some of the stonework and keep it in good shape. I mean, obviously, for accessibility reasons, you're saying you're going to change some of the stairs and such, but some of those abutments and turrets and things like that, if we could invest some money and make sure that they persevere, because it is a unique heritage property. And I think through the designation, we could do more to talk about Charles Mack and how he came by all that money and what his motivation was. I mean, it's a very interesting story that he came up with the first movable type rubber stamp, which seems like a no-brainer, but he made millions and just because he was the first. Mm-hmm. So that would be my first question is regard to the heritage designation. The other concern is just the fact that the park right now is overwhelming the village. It's very popular. You have 35 cars parking, but often the parking just overflows in every direction. And both the region and the town have been forced to bylaw no parking on several stretches of roadway because they were just parking was either dangerous or actually blocking emergency vehicles. So my ask is, number one, that you don't book events that you know are going to consume more than the parking that you have. Mm-hmm. And the other ask would be to consider from your daily use or maybe on the weekend use where it is crowded, to consider this your flagship park or whatever you want to call it, so it costs a bit more, and raise the rates, control the traffic the old capitalist way, supply and demand. You have a lot of demand. Reduce the supply of customers, but keep the money on a constant. You know, go from $5 to $10 on the weekend. See if you can give people alternatives to go elsewhere. You should start thinking about charging at maybe honor system charging, I don't know how, or the pay parking that like they have at the Forks at the Upper Credit to compensate and encourage people to go there. Increase the services, maybe vault toilets, that sort of thing there, so people feel like getting more value for their money. But we really have to talk about what the conservation area is doing to the community. And in terms of, I mean, we have only three or four stores, so that is not what is driving all the traffic. The traffic is being driven by the fact that your sign is out full, and you do take walk-in trade. So people are parking wherever they can, and we have not quite an approved EA in the village. And if it moves forward, and I don't know why it wouldn't, It calls for the elimination of some parkings, at least would be on the weekend, to make provision for pedestrians. So the situation is going to get worse in the village itself in terms of the availability of parking, and you have to think about this park, which is a beautiful park. It's just in the wrong place in the sense that you're overflowing into somebody else's basically backyard, and it's been quite chaotic, especially this last year.
Mm-hmm. So. Through you, Madam Chair, if I can address two parts of that question. Firstly, about raising the funds necessary to help us manage these conservation areas, we're looking at a variety of options. Some of it is fees, but we're also looking at, we have an existing membership program that we're looking at a variety of options to increase the membership to that program or increase the enrollment in that program to raise the funds, but at the same time give the members additional services, additional benefits to that membership that'll hopefully attract more people to our conservation areas. And the second part, looking at parking and visitation concerns to the village and to Bell Fountain Conservation Area. As part of the management plan, we're going to be looking at a variety of options, and we're also going to look at forming another subcommittee, if you will, with all the necessary partners from the Town of Caledon, Region of Peel, CVC, and other public agencies to find some broader solutions, and whether that's some parking solutions in the village or if it's technically outside of the village at other conservation areas, those types of things. So we're looking at a variety of options.
Through you, Madam Chair, if I could quickly just add, this is our busiest time of year, the fall color season, and through the management planning activity, we are looking at how do we expand parking. It is very limited, the parking alternatives for us. And this time of year, if the weather is right and the colors are brilliant, there will never be enough parking to accommodate everyone. It's just we can get 1,000 people in an afternoon, and there isn't 1,000 spots. The good news is, according to Dave Orr, who's our superintendent, has been with CVC for two decades or so, close to that, he was saying that a lot of those people actually aren't stopping. They're driving through. They're on a color tour. They want to see Bell Fountain. They go to Terracotta. They go to the Badlands. They're on a color driving trip. So that's the good news. Not all those cars are looking for parking spots.
That's good news for you, but not for us.
No, that's the bad news for the town. You have beautiful areas here for fall colors. And so as Eric said, we're very aware of the issues, how the population gets driven up weekends, especially Thanksgiving. We are looking at trying to expand our parking where possible, but the reality is if it's beautiful weather and there's a lot of color, there's a lot of cars, and we can't accommodate them all. And luckily, it's only for one or two weekends of the year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councillor Beffert.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. And I support everything that Councillor Patterak has said, and there's no need to review it. Eric, as we have chatted, I think one of the keys, several keys, number one, that you're involving the community in the discussion. And I know our Public Works Director has identified very early in his career here that has to be because we're dealing with those intense issues as Councillor Patterak recommended. And you and I have talked about the fact that we may have to think outside the box on this. We may have to look at shuttles. We may have to look at off-site parking and bring people in. And that leads me to the only question I have about the master plan. I have met with the BCO on several occasions to talk about the fact that there are no washroom facilities in Bell Fountain. There's only one washroom at the coffee shop, and it simply cannot sustain a great number of people. It's my understanding that years ago there were a set of stairs that went down right beside the complex to your park, which would allow people to walk down from the center of town if we could eliminate the parking problem and then access the washrooms that are already there. Part of the problem there is they have to pay to go to the washroom. And so I think if you could, in your master plan, consider that set of steps again and go back and look at what it was in the past, that might help quite a bit if we could then get people to park elsewhere and start walking the village as opposed to driving. So it's just a comment that maybe you and your committee could look at, and I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. It's good to see that you're getting a group of parcels of land to the north of Alton and south of Orangeville gathered up that you can put a trail network. I've seen the benefit in our area in Palgrave area with the Palgrave Conservation Area and the link of all of those, and then the Heritage Trail and the fact that you can go from Bolton, you know, up to Palgrave, and then the trail network, and then the activities that happen there, like the bicycle tracks, and it used to be skiing and stuff like that. So I think it really does add a lot to the community and a lot to the area. As far as Bell Fountain, I was going to take a different tact, and my question would be is that with where it is, it's a very small park and very unique, and probably one of the nicer ones that you've got. I grew up in the area, and that was, when we were in high school, I had a friend who was the maintenance and stuff there, so I kind of spent a couple of summers as that being one of my stomping grounds, so to say. And I wonder about that location, trying to make it less accessible. It's a very unique park, and it's probably better enjoyed with fewer people than it is with more people. So, you know, I think we talked about the only 30 parking spots. Once the parking lot's full, close the park, limit the accessibility, just from the benefit of having it so that the people that are there can experience it. Maybe time limits, because you know it is a fairly small park. Some people come for picnics, quick lunch, or stop for coffee. But then maybe a two-hour limit in the parking lot to try and get more people through. But as you work through your project, as through your master plan, you know, I wonder if that might be something you would consider, because it's not a terracotta park. It's not like an Albion Hills. It's not one that's really designed, and I don't think historically it was ever intended to carry large volumes of people. But like the Badlands, I would hate to see that park get to where the Badlands are, where it's expanded because there's too many people. And being right in the village, I think you've got all the merit and all the support in the community to try and come up with a way to limit the number of people that get to enjoy it. So I just something to think about. It is kind of unique in your inventory.
Through you, Madam Mayor, to address a couple things. And when we speak of accessibility, from our perspective, it's not necessarily to increase visitation to the park. It's more accessibility for all the visitors. The other issue is, yeah, we're very aware that in my field, we call it carrying capacity of the park, is how much is going to be too much for the park. At what point do you reach the limit of visitors between and have impacts between visitors and impacts to the environment? So we're very aware of it. The reality is for us is that there's limited opportunities to increase access as a whole to the park, whether it's through parking or adding in the staircase or other access points. Even if we limit those, because as Judy said earlier, with other tourist sites in the region, even despite our best efforts, we're probably, if we went the route of trying to limit visitation to Bell Fountain, we're probably still going to experience visitation to the village and to the rest of that part of Caledon. So I think it behooves us to find a solution, but be very aware that there will be that fine line between bringing in too many people and serious detrimental impacts to both visitor experience and the natural environment.
Yeah, and I did realize that the accessibility that you were referring to on some of that was the accessibility for physically challenged people. Mm-hmm. But the other term for accessibility is making it more accessible for everybody. And the one I think is a great idea, because everybody should be able to enjoy the park. The other one is you know, maybe not everybody should do it at the same time.
Okay. Excuse me. Thank you. If I could just make a suggestion, when I don't know what page it's on, the Upper Credit Conservation Area, you say two consultations to date, a third expected. When you do these sorts of things in front of the council, could you put public consultations? Because the public doesn't think it would be public. Okay. And so I think it just reinforces the fact that it is public, and it makes it a little easier for everybody involved. And I'm glad to hear that you have a stakeholder advisory committee. Excuse me, and I certainly hope that the BCO person is going back and informing that community of what's taking place and getting direction and input. Mm-hmm. Is that happening?
Yes, that is happening. The input, as I mentioned earlier, to date is generally supportive. They recognize that parking is an issue.
Right.
They don't necessarily come out and support a position one way or the other, but they recognize the issue, and they've been very willing to, they've attended every meeting, and they've provided some great feedback, some concerns that even us as being working in the community all the time don't necessarily see it. We also have a website that members of the advisory committee can access. That's specific to to members of the committee. That's to share the information that we provide them, share information that they provide us. We have information on CVC's website as well. And then specific to the community itself, we will hold additional public consultations for anybody that's interested in attending a session on Bellefontaine, so that whether you're from Caledon, Brampton, Mississauga, Toronto, wherever. But we are also going to hold a separate consultation specific to Bellefontaine community. We're still trying to arrange the date with the community group, but we expect that to happen in November.
Okay. The other thing is you have a bit of a buffer between the park and the street next door, that dead-end street. And can't right off the top of my head remember the name. What is it? Pinnacle? Okay. So if you do expand parking, can I please ask you not to cut down that buffer between the street and the park? Because that is what gives the people who live on that street kind of that separation, so they don't feel they're living in the park with all the
yes.
people. Okay.
When we do our, whatever the preferred options in the plan are, the park itself, it's Niagara Escarpment Plan, it's highly regulated.
I know.
Even with some of the improvements that we would like to make, and we hope that everybody agrees with, the amount of impact that can be done to the natural environment there is going to be very limited. So it's going to be very easy for us to protect those types of features.
You know, I remember when I was on the Credit Valley Conservation Board of Directors and we started looking at master plans for all the different areas, and this one is just such a gem. And I do agree that overuse will kill it. It will ruin it. So somehow there has to be. I was talking to someone from CVC recently, and they were saying that there was going to be parking at the school and a shuttle bus running back and forth. Is that actually going to happen this year?
Through you, Madam Chair, we did look at a number of options to try and implement this year. We do have a permit with the Bellefontaine School to access their parking lot. The bus system, in fact, has been rejected for this year because of a number of things. One is the travel time is estimated at 40 minutes between the school and the park, depending on visitation and traffic, so people can walk faster. It's less than a kilometer. We are looking at increasing our fee, though, for the parking lot this year, and doubling that parking fee at the conservation area. We are going to explore that parking at the Bellefontaine School, but busing at this point logistically isn't going to help. We are looking for alternative parking. Certainly in advance of the 2015 fall color season, we'll be exploring a lot of options, some of the ones mentioned today, alternative parking, busing from other locations farther away, one-way traffic in and out of the town in order to speed up that travel time. So there's a lot of ideas percolating in advance of next year's fall color season.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for coming and presenting. Oh, Councillor Beffert, you're back on again.
I'd just like to add that it's great that CVC has got these meetings going on and so on, but if I was back on council next time, I really think it's important that we facilitate, the town of Caledon facilitate, a gathering of people to support our public works director, to support CVC, to support the BCO. We all have a huge number of questions. I don't know if anybody's got the answers. We've talked about the possibility of a shuttle, including the Badlands. We've talked about off-site parking. Maybe if we facilitate something together, the seed of an idea will germinate, because we all know that something has to be done. So I think we need to do it together, include you and include as many different people as we can.
Through you, Madam Mayor, I can tell you that we've already had some discussions with the Public Works Director, and discussions are very fluent, as you can tell from Judy's recent answer, and we will be in touch again with the Public Works Director, even for our planned meeting in November, to see what the best options are, and involve as many people as possible.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll go on to our next delegation, Heather Savage. Malcolm. Okay, everybody has the slides in front of them? No?
Yes. I want to move it myself. Thank you. Sorry. Sorry, I'm just going to make sure it doesn't move on me. Well, I could talk fast. So, is there any way to pause it? Do you know if there's a way to pause it? Yeah? Okay, well, let's try this. So, yeah, that would be best. Yeah, but I'll begin. Hello, Madam Mayor, Council. Caledon Day happened on Saturday, June 14, 2014. The first picture that you'll see is of, it is of the working group. There are 10 dedicated volunteers that commit their time to this event. There are two library staff and myself. I'm not I am committed, but I'm not a dedicated full-time staff member. This is something that I've helped to grow over the last 7 years, and it complements the rest of my role, my former role as recreation supervisor. Caledon Day is the largest one-day free event in the community, and you'll notice that we changed our tagline this year. It's the Connecting Our Communities. We feel it's the only community event that brings together all of Caledon. There are various village days and service group events that happen within Caledon that allow those communities within Caledon to grow and create an identity and foster uniqueness. And we would like to think that Caledon Day brings together all of those villages in one central location. Thank you. So we estimated that there was 11,200 people in attendance at Caledon Day. That estimation is based on vendor sales. We do work closely with our vendors. We did a survey this year, which I'll go into more detail in the further slides, and we also base it on premium parking. Attendants or participants at the event have the opportunity to ride their bike, to walk, and to carpool, free parking, but there is premium parking, which is $5 per car, and we partner with a local school, a local parent-teacher association, to help offer that service. And based on those numbers, we're able to determine how many people we think attended the event. There were 59 food and product vendors, 52 sponsors and in-kind donors from Caledon and outside of Caledon, and there were 42 volunteers that helped with the event. So the next slide talks about the survey, and I'm just going to highlight some of the survey results. There were 6 questions asked. It was a great way for us to get face-to-face with a lot of the patrons who attended the event to find out why they were there and what motivated them to come to this event. There was a total of 309 surveys submitted, which for the first year which we thought was pretty good response. We feel it represents 1,054 people. 30% of those patrons were from out of town. This is a significant number that we wanted to determine. If you can prove that this is a tourist event, then more funding is available in the future. Or usually there's event funding, but you need to be a 2-day event, and we're not prepared to work 24 hours. Based on the surveys, media interviews, and customer service relations, the patrons reported that they were extremely satisfied with the event. Through word of mouth, that was the number one way people found out about this event, which is, I think, also a significant piece of information. People are talking about this event. It's been around for 7 years, and I think it's doing what it is supposed to do. It's becoming that the town-wide event that people look forward to each year. New this year. We're always trying to increase our greening initiatives or our greening efforts. So we are focusing on reducing our environmental footprint. There were, new this year, was free premium parking for your bike. It was front and center, it was staffed. We partnered with the Region of Peel, and this was a great addition to Caledon's Bike Friendly Community Project. We had 24 bikes in total attend, or be parked in that area, and now that they know it's there, they can leave their car at home, enjoy the beer garden, ride their bike. Waste diversion. There was two central waste depots for patrons to bring their waste to. We had partnered with the Energy and Environment Division and a company called Spinnaker. There were limited waste bins around the event site. People were encouraged to bring their waste to one of these depot stations where they were divided into wet and dry, and then they were shipped off of the event site. An estimated 79% of the event waste was diverted from landfill, and we feel that if you take into consideration waste that was accumulated in the car show area, the soccer park, and the Portalette area, a total of 63% of waste was diverted from this event. The food vendors were also given a large task of following a set of rules as to how to offer their food to patrons. An example would be, please don't sell bottled water. And in order to show appreciation for their efforts, we gave out a Caledon Day Green Vendor Award. They received a ribbon, and there was a tie this year between Westside Grill and the Knights of Columbus. Communications. We partnered with the communications department. They were extremely helpful in getting the word out. By June 15th, the Caledon Day Facebook page had a total of 1,505 page likes, and that was an increase of 7.89%. The largest target demographic was 18 to 24-year-olds, which was interesting because through our survey, the largest demographic were families. So I think that just indicates how people want to respond and give you the information you're looking for. And the majority of Caledon Day followers on Facebook were females. Multiple contests helped generate enthusiasm about Caledon Day. We had a meet and greet with the headliner Big Sugar. We gave away a 6-month pass to one of our local recreation centers, and again, it generated that enthusiasm on the social media. Social media also had a reach as far as Toronto, Brampton, Orangeville, Mississauga, Hamilton, Kitchener, Barrie, and Guelph. And I did speak to people who came in from St. Catharines. So here are the figures over the last 7 years, but more importantly, from the 2014 year. You can see from the chart there that the revenues were $42,708. The expenses were $44,643, with a deficit of $1,935. Based on 11,100 people attending the event, that would approximately be between 17 and 18 cents tax levy for every person that attended the event. There was an operating budget of $37,900 and a revenue of $35,000. So there was an anticipated $2,900 deficit. If you also notice through the report, we had invested $2,700 in permanent signage that we are able to use from year to year. So assuming that we will not incur that cost next year, we should move to a zero deficit. And of course, we'll continue to work within our means. There is also an internal structure within our recreation department because we've recently gone through restructuring. This internal restructuring has allowed us to decrease our deficit, tap into more resources, use more volunteers, and retain the volunteers as well.
local community.
It seems that immediately when Caledon Day is done, I get two emails. One that says, "It was fantastic, thank you, my family had a great day, and how about next year we get tragically hip?" Every year we get that same request, but if one day when we have 500,000...
You forgot about my request.
Johnny Reed, $100,000, we have looked into him. No, they're still selling out the ACC. So I'll just run through a few of these. They also give some highlights of the events that happened. Testament to the fantastic volunteers and staff who work so hard putting this event on for people that call Caledon their home. From a police perspective, we had no real issues develop at the event, and I believe that was largely due to the good planning ahead of the event and the excellent work of everyone on the ground on that day. We are booked to cater at over 125 events this year, and I have to say this one is the most organized event, and I know that this person does the most amount of sales throughout that day, and they are the first ones to rebook the next year. And I know that they are all over Southern Ontario, and each year, I know Wayne can attest to that because he helps out with the vendors a huge amount, that they say that we are the most vendor program in Southern Ontario. It was an awesome event, and a great time was had by all of you. You work so hard at this, and what a success to you, in fact, that you do so much. Thank you to the staff for giving their time, and an even bigger thank you to the volunteers who do this for the love of their community. This is what makes Parks and Recreation so great in this town. The commitment that you and your organizing committee show is evident, but this year was even more noticeable. What was even more noticeable was a certain calmness that everybody seemed to have. The driving force behind the event was a volunteer committee called the Caledon Day Working Group. We do have some members from that working group in our audience today. And just a crowd shot, which on here it's not, you probably can't see it as well, and a crowd shot from behind the stage when the headliner was playing. Well, technical difficulty, but that's the end.
That's good. Thank you very much. I have to say, Heather, that you and the volunteer group did a phenomenal job. I had no idea who Big Sugar was, and that's not why we came back and partook, but certainly enjoyed the day, and I want to thank all of the volunteers and everyone who is involved. It is a wonderful event that pulls this community together. There's people from all over the community, all over Caledon, who come to this event. And that's why we started it. That's what we wanted. We wanted to bring people from all parts of this municipality together so that they could enjoy each other, meet each other, have fun together, and experience a wonderful festival. And that's exactly what you've done. And I don't think any festival or event like this in any community anywhere starts off right off the bat with a profit. You work to that. And so I'm really proud of the fact that you worked to it. It's $1,900 is minimal. It's worth it to bring everybody together in the town of Caledon. And as you said, it's not just this village or that village or whatever. It is for the whole town. And I'm really pleased that at the point where I'm going out the door, it's finally there. So thank you so much. Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Heather, for your presentation. And also thank you and all your staff and volunteers that put this together. It was a great event. And seeing it year after year, it's growing. It's growing in popularity. The catchment area is obviously growing as well. It's great that it's bringing Caledon together, but it's obviously serving even a greater community, which is making us a destination, which is great for this event. The one thing I really wanted to comment on, and I think this is the one thing that allows Caledon to kind of put our little flavor into this event is the whole greening aspect of it. And it's amazing what you've done, making it more enticing to bike or to walk. active transportation, having that included is fantastic. I love what you did with the waste diversion, and you know, talking to the vendors and asking them to reduce their packaging, not offering bottled water when we have the water filling stations and all of that kind of thing, I think puts our little green Caledon spin on it, and I think that's fantastic. It kind of brands it with our stamp. So I just wanted to thank you for that. It was, excuse me, a great, great day, and I look forward to seeing it grow in the future. Thanks.
Councillor Thompson.
I'm not going to get choked up like Rob there, but it was.
I think he had a frog in his throat. I don't think he.
Here you go. What I got to say is it was a great event, and in your presentation when we put that out, I know it's in our council report, Madam Mayor, but it's the sponsors, and I got to say we need to say thank you to the sponsors. Thank you to the volunteers. And I mean, the hours that the volunteers put in right from beginning to end, I got to say your fireworks is fantastic at the end. It's a top-notch show, and every year's got better. And so I guess my question to you is how are you raising the bar for next year?
Mm-hmm. Johnny Reed.
Through you, Madam Mayor, we do have a couple of secrets up our sleeve to raise the bar.
Mr. Barnes?
I think you also have a torch relay.
I know, that was the secret.
Shh.
Yeah, not anymore. Councillor Patterack?
I would put my request in, since everybody's putting their request in. I believe the mayor attended a private concert in Tamarack Estates a number of years ago, where the homeowner brought in, believe it or not, Little Caesar and the Consuls, and they were excellent. They were gray-haired, white, wizened, and all that, but they were right on. Remember that?
Yeah, they were. They were
it was
fantastic.
Fabulous, and it wasn't. Yeah. It was affordable enough that mm-hmm. that a private person could bring them in, and they were just spot on. And they had a couple of younger members, but. It was all those old rock and roll hits. They did a lot of cover stuff, and they had a few hits in the late 60s, early 70s. So, and I can give you the contact information mm-hmm. later. What question I had was, how many other municipalities are aware of where they put on this type of community event, and especially they access, they have volunteers out there looking for those corporate sponsors, which basically are our guardian angels and financially, and are you aware of others that have the same model?
Through you, Madam Mayor. I am a member of the Municipal Event Forum, which represents 42 different municipalities in Southern Ontario. We meet probably quarterly, and we talk about the trials and tribulations of trying to raise funds for events. Larger municipalities, they have a budget built in. They may have one main presenting sponsor, but their events, say Carebram, is not cost recovery. Smaller events, let's say Shelburne Fiddle Festival, I think Tottenham has the Twine, Binder Twine Festival. Yeah, I'm not sure how their budgets operate, but I do know among the participants of this forum, people are still within the same model as Caledon Day, where you are raising the funds, but rarely does it become cost recovery. Events are...
Yeah. Well, the reason why I raise it, because there's been some political stones thrown at us for two reasons. One, we're draining the pool of money available to others by asking for sponsors, and I think it's up to corporations to decide where they're going to spend the money. And the other one was that we lost a lot of money. And I know that both of those comments are very hurtful to the volunteers mm-hmm. that have... done the door knocking. It isn't our staff. I don't think that we have some volunteers, some very good volunteers that are doing the door knocking. And I just I raise it because and I'm going to raise some other things in council inquiry because I believe the press has an obligation to straighten out some of these half-truths and mistruths that are out there. And it's been an ugly fall in that regard for some of us. Thank you.
You probably don't want to say anything. Councillor DeBoer?
having listened to you describe some of the benefits and some of the people that you've had work with you on the show, one of the comments I get is about the fireworks. Mm-hmm. And the fireworks are, you know, you'd pay thousands and thousands of dollars for it. And I think the story that you had with them being there at the start, and I just wondered whether you wanted to share that, because it is a good, somebody who's, like a lot of your volunteers, been there since the start, mm-hmm. and are committed to the whole show, so to say, the whole day. So I don't know if you wanted to just share that sure. little piece.
Sure, thank you. Through you, Madam Mayor. The firework company began with us 7 years ago, and they were just starting out as well. And when we had Calendar Day in the fall, they would use up all their surplus, their supply that they had at the end of the season, and that's why that show was so spectacular. Over the years, they've never increased their price. It has been, including tax, $5,085. And now that we've moved to the beginning of June, they're testing out their new product. And that company has grown with us as well, that they did Harborfront last year. And I remember we did a recommendation for them. But there's that level of commitment, because we were starting out together, growing together, and I think with a lot of the other companies, they see the investment in this town-wide event.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of an interesting story, that they started out at the same time you did, and they've grown and mm-hmm. and use this as a stepping stone to kind of make their business work. Is there a plan in the future, now that you've got 59 vendors, and that is made up with some business people mm-hmm. Promoting themselves, some volunteer groups promoting what they're doing, and then actual full sale vending. Is there any discussion within your group to start looking at your sale vending, your for-profit vendors, and working them up, knowing that it's a big event, you're going to get a lot, they're making, you know, a pretty good dollar, and then using that as an opportunity to get a higher, more returns from those vendors, and then using that to move your finale act, so to say, to up the scale, up the entertainment scale? Not that it's at the bottom anyways, but...
2 years ago, we increased our vendor fees. But I have noticed that when we recite the price to certain businesses, this is extremely cheap. And I know that we are on the low end compared to other municipalities that have a vendor program. We want it to be accessible to all of our local businesses as well. It's an opportunity for them to showcase their services and their products. We are not increasing prices next year, but it's something we can look at in 2 years' time, for 2015 or 16, sorry.
Okay, and I think the comment or the question with regards to sponsorship models and the activity you do, mm-hmm. I think we've always got to be, and I think that is open to all of the volunteer groups, be it the hockey, be it the fairs, be it any mm-hmm. of the community events, that we all look for the sponsors, and everybody needs sponsors, so we need to, you know, be cognizant of when, you know, each time we have an initiative, even as residents, that when we do start to ask sponsors for support, the other part, and the other part of the reciprocal is that when the businesses need business, that you consider them too. So I think that's just kind of the message that would be standard that we have around, you know, the fairs and our associations, and that should be the same with this, and then with your group, keeping in mind that, you know, there is the conflict sometimes. But I think overall the event's really good, and last year was testament to the number of people that were there. And you lucked out, you had good weather.
Mm. Councillor Baffert?
Great report, and I just have one suggestion. We do have some villages. It's a very busy time of the year for people to put on events. And you're so successful now, and there's such a feeling, as the mayor said, about pulling people in Caledon together. If we could get to the villages early and ask them not to plan their events on that particular day, it's tough because some of them have been on that day forever. But because we're growing so much in the intensity of Caledon Day, it might just be the time to start getting everybody thinking ahead that this is the one weekend of the year that we do not plan whatever it is that we have. There's still plenty of other time to do it, but I think maybe going out and visiting a couple of associations and making the presentation that you just did and say, why don't you join us and come on over and we'll work with you on yours. Just a suggestion.
And through you, Madam Mayor, I know that next year we are hoping to connect with 5 different villages in celebration. So we are going to join forces next year, and then in the following year we can discuss that.
Okay. Councillor McClure?
Yes, great report.
I couldn't attend at all last year. I had two grandkids of birthdays, but I was there for some of it, and I enjoyed it. Worthwhile. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And I was really impressed to see that you had increased your sponsors by 25%. Mm-hmm. So I think that success breeds success. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I have a motion moved by Councillor Beffert, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli, that report PREC 2014-016 regarding Caledon Day 2014 summary report be received. All those in favor? It's carried. Thank you. Excuse me. Okay, we're going to go on to RB2, moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor McClure, that report ADM 2014-043 regarding the creation of a permanent easement in favor of the region appeal to accommodate an existing sanitary sewer located near the intersection of Kennedy Road and Highway 410 be received, and that the project manager real estate be authorized to negotiate the sanitary sewer easement in favor of the region appeal near the intersection of Kennedy Road and Highway 410, and that the mayor and clerk be authorized to execute all documents necessary to facilitate the creation of the easement in favor of the region appeal to accommodate the underground sanitary sewer. Councillor Thompson?
There's no private property involved in this, is there? Perfect. Picture you'd wonder, so thank you.
Okay, all those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB3. Moved by Councillor McClure, seconded by Councillor Thompson, that report ADM 2014-045 regarding business licensing update, taxi cab and limousine licensing be received, and that bylaw 2013-127, Town of Caledon licensing bylaw, Schedule F, taxi cab and limousine licensing provisions be amended as follows. A, the requirement for a vulnerable record search for taxi cab or limousine driver's license be amended to require a valid VNS that has been issued within 365 days of the application. B, add the requirement for a criminal records check for taxi cab or limousine driver's license. C, delete paragraph 7, bracket 1, and replace it with the following, asterisk 7, bracket 1. An applicant who fails the driver's test may rewrite a second version of the test no earlier than the day following the first test. The applicant shall pay the prescribed fee as outlined in the town's fees bylaw for each subsequent test. And D, that Schedule F be renumbered accordingly, and that bylaw 2013-127, Town of Caledon licensing bylaw, Schedule E, tattoo, piercing, establishments be deleted, and that bylaw 2013-127, Town of Caledon licensing bylaw be amended to remove any reference to tattoo, piercing establishments, and that the Town of Caledon fees bylaw 2013-131 as amended be amended to add the following fee to Schedule D, additional driver's test, $30 each subsequent test. Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just a question on page 3 of 3, or RB3.2 at the very top. The original test, is there a fee for that initial test, or is it just $30 for subsequent tests?
Through you, Your Mayor, to Councillor Mezzapelli, that original test is included with their licensing fee.
Okay. And the second question I had related to that is, and this is just from my own information, and I don't know industry-wide, but with GPS and technology and all of that, are other municipalities still requiring tests for knowing local streets? Like, you can just punch it in any GPS. Is this still happening in other municipalities?
Through your mayor, to Councillor Mezzapelli, yes, it's my understanding that other municipalities are requiring, and it's just ensuring that our drivers are familiar with the town of Caledon and ensuring that they know where the quickest routes to get to. It's more of a customer control or quality control type test.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Move on to RB4. There is a new report, which I believe you all have. One of the reasons is because it has to do with the regional part of the recommendation. With the original recommendation, it talked about, to ensure the execution of an access agreement. We can't ensure that. The region appeal is working with them, and when you read the report, you will see in the report that the region has no objection, and so what will happen is the region then will work with the proponent on the access. It's not up to us to tell them how and when and where and what. So I have a motion moved by Councillor Beffert, seconded by Councillor Patterack, that report DP 2014-096 regarding the proposed Rogers Telecommunications Tower at 17049 Winston Churchill Boulevard be received, and that the proposed Rogers Telecommunications Tower at 17049 Winston Churchill Boulevard be endorsed, and that a copy of this resolution and report DP 2014-096 be forwarded to the applicant, owner, Industry Canada, Region Appeal, and the Credit Valley Conservation Authority. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB5. Moved by Councillor Patterack, seconded by Councillor Thompson, that report PW 2014-070 regarding correction to staff report PW 2014-018 concerning the reconstruction of the Orange Lodge be received. And it was very self-explanatory in the report as to why this is coming forward. So, nope. Oh, Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to be absolutely sure. So this is just a correction. The business that we did the previous council meeting on this issue, that still stands. It's just, okay.
It was some numbers that were different.
Thanks.
And so they just corrected the numbers in this. All those in favor, Councillor, Mr. Gorder. You don't want to be a councillor. You want to speak? No? Okay. Councillor DeBoer?
Just further to that, I just wonder if Public Works can make it abundantly clear what exactly we are doing going forward, just so that, because I believe that's where the project is, just so that it's clear with this report.
Okay.
Through you, Madam Mayor. There's a number of things on the go right now. So first and foremost, we're going to find a location for the Orange Lodge to remove it from our parking lot to permanent storage, temporary permanent storage. And the second thing that we're going to start working on as soon as we finish sort of budget deliberations, we're going to start looking on working with the Heritage Committee to find alternatives and come back to the next council with a proposal of what to do with the Orange Lodge. So. Our staff is doing the background work right now, and we're going to come out shortly. So,
okay. I guess I would really like, there's some information that's floating around from prospective candidates. I guess they are candidates, but there's a lot of negative information floating around out there. And one of the things in one of the brochures is that we have spent almost $1 million on the Orange Lodge. So have we spent more than what we originally had?
Mayor Morrison, I believe in the last report on Orange Lodge, it identified that we spent about $120,000.
That's right.
And that was $120,000 committed, so it includes projected rental until, I think, mid-next year.
Yeah, so it takes care of all the costs. Yes, thank you very much. So it's no $900,000 or $1 million. I actually spoke to the person and told them they need to get their facts straight. Sick of it. Okay, Councillor Beffert.
Yes, through you, please, to the Director of Public Works. There are a couple of groups that are just asking what the process will be. If there is a group right now that might be remotely interested, should they contact you or should they wait until we take the next step?
Through you, Mayor Morrison. I mean, initial communications, I think, with any group that are looking at or interested, I don't think any group at this point could say I'm interested until they sit down and have this conversation is, what is it? What do we have? What drawings do we have? How easy would it be to put together for them? All of those things. So I think I'd be more than open to sit down with them to have an initial conversation. I mean, if we had an unsolicited proposal, I think we would look at it. But the idea at this point is that nobody stepped forward, that we would go out to the public to say, is anyone interested at this point in maintaining or preserving the Orange Lodge, and then we'll work forward with a plan from there.
So but you'd certainly put their name on a list and contact them when the time comes.
Yeah, it's not easy at this point, given that it's sitting in a couple boxes in the back for someone to really understand where we are and what would that mean.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I meant to say when I spoke previously, we had a heritage meeting yesterday, and there was some confusion. The previous heritage meeting, which you sat at, the Heritage Committee basically recognized that this was coming cost prohibitive, and they actually didn't support going forward with it. But one thing that they resolved at that point was to hold the money and to look at other funding opportunities to fill that gap in funding. And then when it came to council, I had tried to pass a motion to reflect that, and it got voted down. And then another motion came forward, which passed. And the committee felt it was a little ambiguous in its wording. So I know you spoke about speaking with the committee, and I would urge you to do that to clarify that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. We're going to move on to receipt of the minutes. I have a motion moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Mazzapelli, that the minutes of the following meetings be adopted as written and distributed and printed. All those in favor? Okay, it's carried. Councillor Mazzapelli?
I was just wondering, Madam Mayor, have we done RB1? I know we did the...
Yes, we did. We voted on it right after the presentation.
I'll delegation. Ask the question of staff then. Thanks. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Good thing you can take kidding, I'll tell you. Usually people don't do that, though, unless they like you, so that's a good thing. Proclamations. The first proclamation is moved by Councillor Mazzapelli, seconded by Councillor Beffert, whereas the Town of Caledon is committed to ensuring the safety of all those living in and visiting the community, and homes are the locations where people are at greatest risk from fire, and whereas working smoke alarms cut the risk of dying in reported home fires in half, and whereas Caledon's first responders are dedicated to reducing the occurrence of home fires and home fire injuries through prevention and protection education, whereas residents should install smoke alarms in every level of their home and outside all sleeping areas, and whereas residents who have planned and practiced a home fire escape plan for more are more prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire, and whereas the 2014 Fire Prevention Week theme, Working Smoke Alarms Save Lives, Test Yours Monthly, effectively serves to remind us that we need working smoke alarms to give us the time to get out safely. Therefore, be it resolved by the Council of the Corporation of the Town of Caledon, proclaim October 5th to the 11th, 2014 as Fire Prevention Week throughout the Town of Caledon, and I urge all people of Caledon to protect their homes and families by heeding the important safety messages of Fire Prevention Week 2014 and to support the many public safety activities and efforts of the Caledon Fire and Emergency Services. I have to tell you, yesterday at the kickoff at Southfield School, the chief was wonderful with the kids, just wonderful. And he actually told them that they need to go home and tell their parents that they should have a working smoke alarm in their bedrooms. And I thought, well, you know, that's really novel. We've always had them out in the hall there, but not in the bedroom. And I thought that was really good for the cost of it. And if it ever came to actually saving a life, it certainly worth it. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, proclamation two, moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, whereas Ontario has been the destination of choice for many immigrants who have added to the diversity of the province by bringing their culture, customs, and language, even as they endeavor to acquire the ability to communicate in English. And whereas the professional organization Teachers of English as a Second Language, Ontario hosts a conference in Toronto each year consisting of workshops, research, symposia, and a technology fair to maintain and expand the skills and abilities of its members. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Town of Caledon hereby proclaims the week of October 12th to the 18th, 2014, as English as a Second Language Week. All those in favor? It's carried. The next proclamation is has been moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Foley, whereas the generation of solid waste and the needless waste of water and energy resources are recognized as global environmental problems, whereas municipal and provincial governments have an important role to play in promoting waste reduction, reuse, recycling, composting, and other conservation measures. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Council hereby proclaims the week of October 20th to the 26th, 2014 as Waste Reduction Week in the Town of Caledon. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, Proclamation 4, moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Beffert, whereas years of research confirms the benefits of high-quality child care for young children's intellectual, emotional, social, and physical development and later life outcomes. Therefore, be it resolved that the Town of Caledon proclaim October 29th, 2014, to be the 14th Annual Child Care Worker and Early Childhood Educator Appreciation Day in recognition of the education, dedication, and commitment of child care workers to children, their families, and quality of life of the community in the Town of Caledon. All those in favor? Carried. And the fifth proclamation is moved by Councillor McClure, seconded by Councillor Thompson, whereas pulmonary hypertension, or PH, is a disease affecting the arteries of the lungs. It can strike anyone regardless of age, sex, social, or ethnic background. In pulmonary hypertension, which means high blood pressure in the lungs, the arteries of the lungs become narrowed and scarred, which can result in almost complete closing of the arteries. People affected with this disease suffer from continuous high blood pressure in the lungs, which results in an enlargement of the heart and can lead to heart failure. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Council for the Corporation of the Town of Caledon proclaims November 2014 as Pulmonary Hypertension Month. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay. Correspondence? Okay, well, maybe we'll go on to this. Okay. Okay, I have a motion moved by Councillor Foley and seconded by Councillor McClure that Council introduce a notice of motion without notice concerning the licensing bylaw. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, and then we have the bylaw moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor McClure, that the following bylaws be read a first, second, and third time and finally passed. And it's bylaw 2014-091 to amend bylaw 2013-127, being a bylaw to provide for the licensing and regulation of various businesses in the Town of Caledon. And that goes with what we did earlier in our regular business. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, now we will, go back. We will go back to announcements. Carrie doesn't want me to do this, but I'm going to anyway. I just want to say that we're recognizing and acknowledging the commitment of Carrie for 10 years as celebrating her achievements as a member of the Association of Municipal Managers, Clerks, and Treasurers of Ontario. And so we just want to publicly recognize you. I understand that Carrie actually teaches in that course, so that's really good for the Town of Caledon. It gives us a profile that we actually have qualified, wonderfully qualified people who can teach the courses. So I just wanted to recognize her. I know she didn't want me to, but I'm doing it anyway. Okay, urgent business. We just did that. Notice is a motion printed with the agenda. There wasn't any. Notice is a motion presented at the meeting. There shouldn't be any, should there? No, there should not be any. I don't know what you're pointing to. Okay, because we can't do that and carry it on, folks. Excuse me, and we're going to do council inquiries. Councillor Whitehead? No. Councillor Thompson? Councillor Mazzapelli?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Since I was so busy regaining my composure after the
getting choked up.
Caledon Day presentation, and I missed the report. I had a question with respect to indirect expenses. It was identified in the report that there's virtually half of our expenses, $23,600 in staffing costs. I was just curious to know whether this is actual overtime or this is just regular time that they just attribute to Caledon Day. I'm wondering if that is known.
Okay, just one second and we'll have that answered. Just have to push the little red button up there. Thank you.
Through you, Madam Mayor. I'll respond to that on behalf of Heather Savage. The I believe that number has been attributed to the resources that would have taken if we had to pay all of our departments for that time. So when we ask Public Works to put signs out for us, or if we're looking, we work through our departments, that's the money that's attributed to that cost. But it's it's on top of their workload. It's not something in addition. It's not overtime, and it's not expense paid out. It's in addition to their workloads.
Okay, and I figured that was the case. And just from my perspective, when I look at this practically, and I know you have to attribute time and mm-hmm. what the cost of that time is to certain things, and in this case, Caledon Day. To me, in the end, what that means is that this actually was not a deficit because they were just taking their time and they were applying it here. I fully expect nothing was not getting done because they were. So I take heart in that, in that we actually are working probably a surplus. So that's just the way I look at it.
Great.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
Just further to that, Councillor Mazzapelli, I would assume we absorb when we go to any of our other little community celebrations like, we'll say, Cheltenham Day mm-hmm. or Inglewood Day, and our staff, our public work staff, deliver all of the picnic tables, put up the beer containment area, and do that sort of thing. It would be the same sort of thing.
I'll answer that two ways, Madam Mayor. Okay. In respect, some of those groups and organizations in the community events that you're talking about receive community event funding that offset that through the event fund.
Right.
However, it would be not unlike what we do for community development. Our Parks and Rec staff mm-hmm. will attend those events and participate in those events to promote ourselves. Certainly, that's not in addition to their workload, and they're participating on behalf of the town at those events. And in certain cases, I'm sure that's the case as well.
So that's even more... that it breaks even.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Councillor Paderak?
I have a list of questions, possibly five at the maximum. the first four I will ask Mr. Wong. There have been statements made that $4.5 million of tax money was spent on the Caledon Equestrian Park, including the community hall. Can you... go through the expense and where it came from?
Sure. Through you, Mayor Morrison. The Caledon Equestrian Park project is $11.7 million, and that has always been the original number. And we always identified that TO 2015 will be providing a grant for 56% of that, so that's about $6.6 million. The balance, which is $5.1 million, is split evenly between EMG, TRCA, and the town of Caledon. TRCA has also said that they would contribute an additional $550,000, which increases the project to about $12.3 million. At the end, the town is basically getting a $12 million facility for a direct investment of about $1.7 million. And the town has identified in the past that it will debenture the $1.7 million in the future and repay that debenture through rental revenues, net rental revenues that will come from the Calvin Equestrian Park after it's built and after the games.
And further, the community hall, what was the financing of the community hall?
And through you, Mayor Morrison, the Palgrave Community Center is a $2 million project. That project was funded from the land sales reserve, $320,000, and the bulk of it, $1.7 million, is from development charges.
And lastly, we have actually expended tax money on the Platinum, I don't know what it was called, but the...
That is correct. The Municipal Designation Program is the town's participation in promoting the Pan Am Games. There was a council report brought forward on that, and council approved for over a two-year period, including in the operating budget, $97,500 in the operating budget, for a total participation of $195,000.
Thank you. My second question, series of questions, concerns the Building Department Reserve Fund. There was a statement made at the All Candidates meeting that that fund is fed by a 40% surcharge, I believe it was 40% surcharge on each and every building permit. I think it's much smaller than that, but you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, I have to check to see what the percentage is. I doubt that it's 40%. It is something that when there is provincial legislation that says that all municipalities, when establishing building permit fees, we must look at all costs related to recovery related to building, so that there is no impact on property taxes, for example. The reserve itself is used to pay for future building work in the area, but I'll wait for your further questions.
What happens if we get zero or very few building permits the year following? How many permits are still open in an average year? I mean, if you went between December and January, and how would this impact a large project like Canadian Tire if we didn't have this reserve?
Okay, so through you, Mayor Morrison, let me start off by saying that the balance in the reserve, the Building Permit Stabilization Reserve Fund, is $2.6 million. It was $2.6 at the end of 2013. We report on that in our reserve report, and there's actually a building report that comes out that identifies that. This is pretty much the highest balance over the last 6 years, $2.6 million. Building permit fees are charged to major developers and other property owners that wish to develop. The work in the building department may span over multiple years. So the fee is paid today, let's say, and there is work related to the review of plans that may happen this year. And if there's any change in plans, that may span over several months. And then throughout the construction, there is inspection that is done by the building department. So that throughout, and construction may last, let's say, a year to 2 years, and then there's a final inspection that's done. So the money that's set aside in the reserve is to ensure that we have enough money to pay for the required work, which may be 1.5 to 2 years down the road. So when we talk about a large development, you need to establish the money in the reserve. And if there is a downturn, and if, let's say, we receive no additional building permit revenue over the next couple of years, we will draw from that reserve to ensure that the building department has sufficient funds to carry out its duties for all applications received a year and a half to 2 years prior to when they need to do their work. This makes good business sense, and as I mentioned earlier, it is provincial legislation to make sure that we fully cost recover.
And we've capped our reserve. We will cap it at $3 million, is that correct?
Through you, Mayor Morrison, we have consistently put out there that our target for this reserve is about 1.5 to 2 years worth of work, which means if any application that comes in today, we will have, and if no other applications come in over the next 2 years, we will have enough money to draw from that reserve to keep the department going for 2 years out. So 1 year of operations for the building department is approximately $2.4 million. So with a reserve balance currently at $2.6 million, we're about just about a year's, we have about enough to draw from that reserve for a year's worth of building permit applications. So with the target of 1.5 to 2 years, the maximum we're targeting in there is about $4.8 million currently. Right, so basically that $4.8 million means that any application that comes in today, we will be able to draw from that reserve if all other development stops to meet our commitments of doing the inspections 2 years from now.
And would we reduce our fees if we attain that, fill that reserve to the level we think is sufficient?
Yeah, through you, Mayor Morrison, that is correct. Okay. Because of the provincial legislation, if we are at the max of our reserve, we would lower our fees because there is no further contribution that's required.
And to paraphrase what you said about what the province says, this practice is consistent with growth playing for growth.
Through Mayor Morrison, that is correct. I mean, if we did not do it this way, the province doesn't mandate that you have to set a reserve, but it's good business practice that you do so. And if we did not do this, and this doing it this way would actually, it protects us recovering these costs from the tax base.
Right. My next area, I got some figures from Norm Lingard. He tells me from between January 2004 through the finish of December 2013, we added about 9.3 million square feet of commercial industrial space through building permits that were issued. There was a statement made that nothing had occurred. We had had absolutely no growth. The same statement was made at multiple all candidates meetings. And I was just curious if you could give me a ballpark figure as to approximately what the tax yield would be from 9.3 million square feet.
Councillor, that's okay. I'm going to talk to Councillor Paderak while you're looking for something. Councillor Paderak, we have to be careful that we're asking as a councillor at this council table questions and not as a candidate in the election.
I know. Okay. This was not a candidate that I'm running against.
Okay.
So if you can't answer that, that's okay. It would be a considerable amount of money.
So what we do at every budget time is we actually identify what I mentioned earlier is that, so we assume that it takes about 2 years to complete, once a building permit's pulled, it may take about 2 years to complete a construction. We assume that a total of 3 years after building permit is pulled, we may start receiving additional property tax revenue. So every year at budget time, we work with the planning department to identify what has been done, what's in the hopper, in order to project out incremental tax revenue for the town. And this chart was shown for the 2014 budget, and it identifies the additional assessment growth and additional taxes related to growth. So you can see that it's broken out between, you know, residential development and industrial commercial. For the next few years, in the short term, it's mostly residential because of the GTA East-West corridor, and that was explained during the budget deliberations last year. So we do look at it. We are projecting incremental revenue related to growth on the property tax side. We also use this information to project out our development charge revenues and everything else.
Okay, thank you. I did have one question for Public Works. I spoke to David this morning about the haul route for the Thomas Farm subdivision, which evidently was left out of the draft the draft plan of subdivision agreement with whoever the developer would be. At the time that it was approved, Mississauga Road was a gravel road, so it wouldn't have been an issue. In the interim, we've paved or done light pavement on Mississauga Road, and now we have the situation where we have 117 houses proposed to be built in Thomas Farm. These houses will probably average close to $1 million each, so it's a considerable tax yield to the town. But because we didn't have that agreement subdivision agreement, the developer is choosing to use the shortest route to keep his exposure to damage to our roads to the least amount. So what is happening is Highway 136, Regional Road 136, is being used into the Four Corners at alternate, and then hundreds of heavy trucks will go down Queen Street to Thomas Farm. We're doing this so that, or he is doing this, so that he does not damage Mississauga Road. Mississauga Road probably will have to be rebuilt. In the short run, it was light pavement. I want staff to investigate what we can do to identify what the developer's cost would be if he did use Mississauga Road, and to decide whether the developer should be charged, or should, if he were to choose to use Mississauga Road, or should the town eat it because it did not specify which road should be used. We're talking about a project that's going to last several years. We have 117 houses. We have heavy trucks with stone and brick and concrete. They're all going down a very undersized, probably the smallest downtown street we have in any village or settlement area in terms of a commercial street, Queen Street. And I find it unconscionable that we're sticking to our guns on this, and we're basically going to hold this community hostage for a number of years. So I ask staff to take a good look at this, and I think it should be more interdepartmental than one department. I don't know what can be done, but I'm not a happy camper.
Mr. Leveridge, could you please tell us what you need in order to do that? Do you need a motion? Do you need direction? What do you need?
Through you, Madam Mayor. So I think you've raised a number of points there, and I think I'll just walk through them one by one, Councillor, if I could. Number one is the agreement that you speak of is an agreement that was signed 20 years ago with a developer. We're in the process through a planning department at this point to amend that agreement. And so as part of the process, and I know you're well aware, as part of the process to get us to that amending agreement, we've been working with the developer nonstop for the last 3 to 4 months to get him into a grading and pre-servicing agreement that was acceptable to us. We are now in a position of, it's about 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, where we actually have the developer signing that grading and pre-servicing agreement, which allowed work to go forward. As part of that, they need a trucking route to get in. There's a number of activities that they would like to do before doing now and the end of the year. So number one is they want to hook up the stormwater management pond to head wall that feeds into Shaw's Creek. Shaw's Creek, I think it is, yeah. Number two is they want to bring in, they've already done the pre-grading. They want to start bringing in the pipes, the asphalt, the concrete curbing, all of the other work that has to be done to complete the pre-sort of grading and pre-servicing before winter time. In order to do that, they need a trucking route, and the only approved trucking route into that area at this point is 136 or Main Street that comes up. That's a regional road, which brings them to the shortest access point, which is Queen Street from the Four Corners into that development. I've met with the developer, or actually not the developer himself, but the developer's engineers, including TAC. There's a number of issues that are ongoing there, and we've met with them on a regular basis, including last week. And so in the short term, in order for them to get going until we have an agreement in place as to using Mississauga Road as a truck route, because it is not a truck route at this point, they have the right, the proper right, to use the only available trucking route to them, which is 136 to the Four Corners and in. They started doing that last Thursday or Friday. And with the understanding that the staff would be dealing with the developer this week based on two proposals that we gave them, right? They're supposed to come back to us this week, either the developer or the developer's staff, to say which one. So the two alternatives were, one is that they deposit a line of credit with us I've agreed since day one that they can use Mississauga as a truck route, with the understanding that the damage is done to that route as a result of the trucking that's going to go in there would be the responsibility of the developer. We know the condition of that road today. Our road assessment just went across that road 2 weeks ago, so we know the exact condition of that road. And in 10-meter segments, every inch of that road, we know what the condition is. And so the two options for them was that they would take on the responsibility to maintain that road from now until the time that the development was completed, and at every time that there was a problem with that road, whether it was potholes or cracking or breakup or whatever, they would go in and they would do the repairs. That was option one. Option two was that the developer deposited a line of credit with the town of Caledon, that they run it, and basically they will run that road into the ground. And then at the end of that, they'll be responsible for a portion of the rebuild of that road. So those are the two options that went back to the developer from their staff. So at this point, they do not have permission to use Mississauga Road. It is not a truck route. And if we need to move forward, to answer your question, Mayor Morrison, this council can make the decision to say open Mississauga Road as a truck route and the town bites it. That's not the policy that we followed for the last few years. We insist that any developer that's using our roads, in order for the development, that they either deposit a line of credit or that they agree to repair those roads to the condition or a portion of the damage that they're going to do to it.
Okay.
In terms of, have you assigned a dollar figure to what percentage of the rebuild would be the developer's responsibility? Because, you know, the way I look at it, we have roughly $100 million worth of assessment here. And if my math is correct, that will give us a tax yield of $380,000 a year. We also, and what I didn't mention is that Councillor Befford and I met, and recently staff met, we've all met with the Millcroft. The Millcroft is talking about a major expansion. They are also going to have to use Queen Street. And this is going to make, for years, it's going to make life hell on a street that's very narrow, that has houses that are built right up to it. It's probably the narrowest window-to-window street in the town, except for some condo streets that we have. But in terms of main streets, it's the narrowest we have.
Through you, Mayor Morrison. I think it's a general point, Councillor. We all agree that coming in on 136 and going through Queen Street, or coming up south from Charleston up through 136 through the Four Corners, is in no way an ideal situation for us. I get that, but Mississauga Road currently is not built or constructed as a heavy road. And we're talking thousands of heavy trucks coming in through that route. Everything from asphalt to pipes to concrete to dirt to construction materials. And so the policy that we followed to date, I just repeat, is that if they want to use that road, and we've insisted, whether Moss Corp or Cost Corp or any of those other corporations, more than willing to open Mississauga Road, happy to, think it's the best solution, but there's a cost to doing that. So what is the cost? A total rebuild of that road is $1.6 million. A shave and pave of that road is $350,000 to $400,000. What portion of that do we figure is we think that road is sitting right now around 65%, 60 to 65%. If I allow that developer and all of the people who are going to build houses on that over the next 2 to 3 years, that road will be in a total rebuild. So the cost to you is $1.6 million. The cost to that developer, we're already at 65. If we say that we're going to beat it down to 40, we're about 25% of that $1.6 million. We're looking at about $400,000, $450,000 that developer would be responsible to. The trouble with this is asking this to developer to do that is not as simple, because he's now planning to sell each one of those lots to a custom builder. So now do we give him a portion for his, and then each custom builder comes in on the building permit, we say, we're now going to, you know, each homeowner will have to pay a portion to bring all your materials in. All that said is, you know, I think we're on the same page of where the road is, but, you know, our job as staff is to protect the interests of the town of Caledon, and one of our interests is to make sure that Mississauga Road is, we have the money in pocket or available to us to maintain that road after the construction.
Be done.
And you're done.
I think ethically we have a responsibility to get some money from the developer. I agree there. That's what I would like. But we have to talk about same to same. We have light pavement on there. When you talk about $1.6 million, you're talking about doing it properly. It was not done properly. It is not a proper road. It was tar and chip or H, whatever it was we did on that road. It's light pavement. It's the 350. And the question is, what portion of that 350 is the Alton Estates eligible or should be paying, and also the Millcroft when they go to build? I mean, and because we're going to have to, we've been talking to the people of Alton about rebuilding Queen Street in the next year or two. You can't do that. They're going to be 5, 6, 7 years out. We're in a very, very difficult and I would say a losing proposition if we leave it the way it is.
Okay, thank you. Councillor McClure. No, Councillor Foley. Is okay, Councillor DeBoer.
Okay, one question I had with regards to taxation and actually more so assessment. So whether it's finance or corporate services, and it's the new homes across the road, and I don't know if the other councillors in Mayfield West whether it's the same, but I've been had a number of inquiries that the assessed value across the road appears to be consistently about $100,000 more than what their purchase prices were across the road, and I haven't been involved with large-scale development and wondering why impact, especially when you're looking at only 2 to 3 years out, why the assessed value would be that much more when they talk about person-to-person sales or the purchase price, why there would be such a difference. And I realized like some of the early buyers would have bought at a, not a premium, but the opposite, like a discount. And some of those might have flipped and they might have seen that large increase, but the vast majority of the homes in that community wouldn't qualify for that because they would have bought at the higher price and they're not seeing that on the secondary home. So at what point does that catch up, or do you need to just do some looking into it to see if this is consistently what's going on over there?
Ms. Tollett?
Through you, Madam Mayor. So the way it works is through MPAC we can actually certainly look at it, but it does take several years before the full value of that property gets reflected. It should be consistent with all the properties there, but the MPAC does that kind of estimate from now until the next assessment roll. So we can certainly look to make sure that the whole, all those houses are consistent value, but those numbers are provided by MPAC to us to do the billing.
Well, I realize, that it's MPAC that provides us with the numbers. It's just the question is why is the MPAC value so high, $100,000? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people are getting their first bills or their catch-up bill, so it's sizable to begin with. But why is the assessed value that high, or is that something because of the catch-up bill? And then are these people going to expect to see a decrease in their value to more of what they purchased it at the next assessment time?
Not necessarily, because that value is based on what you can sell it for, not necessarily what you bought it for. That should be close to what you bought it for, but if I were to sell one of those houses across the street now, that's what MPAC is saying they can potentially get it for. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go up or down, but if they certainly have an issue what the assessment value is, they can check with MPAC. But if it's a row of all the similar size houses with the same kind of structure, it should be the same.
Okay.
And they can go on to the MPAC's website under My Property and look and see if all those houses are similar.
Okay, and I think they are saying consistently they're not seeing, the houses that are selling aren't selling for the prices that they're appraised at, but they don't seem to get any traction with MPAC on that whole issue. So
the other thing they can do is they can also, every property owner can apply for a reconsideration. That's done at the end of March of each year.
Yeah, and I guess that's what we're going to have to encourage them to do, but there isn't any way as a municipality, we can question, because there's a number of properties, it seems.
The town does that same process every year in March as well. So we also look at properties that may be valued incorrectly and apply to increase our assessment value norm. Or if there's problems or issues of properties, we do apply through the 357, 358.
So there is a way that we could, as the town, look at that and see whether it, through the March assessment that we do, whether it is proper and do it as a collective one then. And then the question is that the same comments that you get as Mayfield West? Is that the same way?
And okay. The other thing that you might want to make sure with your residents is the hydro. They had this huge problem in Mayfield West where they were being charged as rural, even though they're not rural anymore. And so the charge was huge compared to what you are if you're considered urban. This is urban, but you never know what hydro's doing. They might be charging them as rural, so you might want them to look at their bills and see if they're reasonable, because what happened in Southfields is they weren't reasonable. And one of the homeowners actually, I mean, we didn't even know about it, and then one of the homeowners brought it to a meeting, and I know I happened to go to that meeting, and they're bringing it up, and they're saying, you know, this is what they're doing to us, and we need to. And when they got in touch with Hydro said, well, no, you're classed rural. And so they all got together and got in with Hydro and said, we are an urban area. Yes, and Sylvia, they got Sylvia involved, because, I mean, the municipality, you know, I said I would certainly get in touch with Hydro and talk to them, but Sylvia jumped in and said, I'll carry that. And she did, and she got them reassessed as urban.
Okay.
And not, so you might want to talk to them, because Hydro plays that game.
Okay. Well, I think this taxation one, maybe at March, maybe we need to look at whether it is a collective one or whether that's something that we have to look at. So maybe just remind me, we'll have that discussion then. And the only other one is, and we were talking about the Pan Am Horse Park. I think in speaking with, and they're right up the road from me, so I do see it and keep track of what's going on up there. They had their last show, was their biggest show, and Craig made the comment that 50-odd international riders, and they never had that many at that site before. Mm-hmm. So closing out the season that way is very optimistic and looking like what it's going to be like heading into the Pan Am Games next year and the activity at that park and that location on into the future. So I think that's fairly important to keep in mind as members of council, you know, that it is being recognized by the industry as being a top shelf location.
I can tell you that there were riders, I was there, there were riders from Russia, Ukraine, Colombia, Brazil, the US, I think there was one from Romania. It was phenomenal, just phenomenal. And the Canadians won. Anyway, Councillor Beffert.
Yes, I'd just like to follow up on Councillor Patarak's questions. And David, I know you're aware of this. You're caught between a rock and a hard place. But the new school in Alton is now complete. Every child that goes to that school, save for some special education, walks to school from every corner of that village. And if we have trucks coming up Main Street and turning left, that's going to throw a real monkey wrench into a lot of kids walking to school. So it's something that we really have to consider. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I was going to ask some things, but it's been covered, so I'm not going to now. Thank you. So that's done. Okay. So we're at correspondence. Okay. Councillor Foley, would you... I'm going to drop this on your desk because this is the one that I would prefer not to be at the table.
We have a motion moved by Councillor Patarak, seconded by Councillor Beffert, that the petition received from the residents of McCall Drive regarding the 2015 Niagara Escarpment Plan review be received. and that the petition be forwarded to the Niagara Escarpment Commission, and that staff review this request by the residents of McCall Drive and report back to Council with a recommendation as to staff's potential support of the proposed change to the NEP minor urban boundary for Inglewood. All in favor? Did you have a question? Yes. Councillor Thompson.
I have a question, and I guess it's going back to planning. I have the same challenge in Terracotta as I do in Cheltenham. So do I need to bring petitions forward the same way to get this addressed, to have them added to the urban boundary?
Through you, Councillor Foley, to Councillor Thompson.
Yes.
It's not necessary to have a petition or a correspondence with a petition sent to us. I would say that what we're expecting through the 5-year, the 10-year review and the impact and comments that we're going to hear from the residents and council through the reporting that we'll do back to you and the workshops that we'll have with you is that if that is a request and we feel that it is important, obviously we would make that recommendation back when we bring the final report to you. So I'm not sure if a petition is required. If you feel as though a petition is required, you know.
Councillor Patterick.
I advise the residents that petition might be helpful to get a little extra attention. Council might remember that a couple of years ago, we passed a resolution which asked that the Inglewood Community Center property, which includes the Bethel Hospice leased property, be brought into the village, which was an oversight, obviously, at the proclamation of the Niagara Escarpment Plan. And after that, the residents approached Doug and I and we started talking about this. And this type of thing is considered housekeeping in a plan review. It's not a policy thing. It's just, you know, doing some minor mapping changes and agreeing that these, I think there's 10 houses belong in the village, not outside the village. They participate with the village. And so, and it just removes them from development control into zoning. So that's why it's before us.
Okay, all in favor? Moved by Councillor Thompson, seconded by Councillor McClure, that the mayor be directed to send a letter on behalf of the Town of Caledon to Industry Canada expressing concern regarding the proposed new licensing process in rural areas. All those in favor? No? Okay. Was this from last time? Okay. Councillor Thompson?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Where this has come from, I was at the Roma board meeting on Thursday. And this came up, and we got it in time. I wasn't sure if we were. The big thing is could we please send this to David Tilson? This is huge. What it is Industry Canada has made a total boo-boo here, and the commenting period is very short. We're into election mode here. But what it means is, I'll use an example with ExploreNet. If this goes through, what Industry Canada is proposing is, within a year and a half, ExploreNet has to shut down all their towers across Ontario, let alone Canada. Because what they're doing is whoever controls the hard wiring has control over the whole market. So basically, they're shutting everybody else out. So it was what they were looking for was expansion to allow this to happen. Instead, rural Canada is going to lose. This FCM really thought they had accomplished something, and it's the complete opposite is what the Canadian government's come out with, and it's asinine. So we definitely need to send a letter, but we need to send this to David Tilson too and hold his feet to the fire. It's his government that's making a mess of this. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you. All those in favor? Carried.
Okay, moved by Councillor Mazzapelli, seconded by Councillor Beffert, that the correspondence items as listed in the correspondence package for the October 7th, 2014 Council meeting be received. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, go to public question period. Are there any members of the public who would like to ask a question?
I'd like to talk to you about the Caledon Day report. I find it very offensive that, Wayne Noble. I find it very offensive that we can be used as a political pawn in a campaign that to say that the town threw away the money that and that the volunteers were paid. We were not paid. I've been on this committee long enough now that I think we've gone through the expenses and we've tried to save everything we can right down to the stakes that we reuse. So I find it offensive that somebody can say that not only to the volunteers but to the town but also to the people that have spent money, the sponsors. And if you look at the sponsorship, how many of those sponsors we've been able to get back the following year and the year after because they've received good value for the money. So it's... to me, the town should be doing something to defend the volunteers and to defend itself in this, because I think it's wrong, and I believe I know where some of it's coming from, and it's the way it is presented on the budget. Because I know I've been beat up on it a couple times, and I know the mayor has been beat up on it a couple times. Is that it shows up on the budget at the beginning of the year? It shows up as an expense, and I'm not an accountant. I'm not a specialist at it. I'm not proclaiming to be, but there should be a way of putting it on there that if it's 42,000 or whatever it may happen to be, that we expect to recoup 80%, 90% of or whatever, just to something, because right now what it does is it jumps out as an expense, and even I got questioned on it, and I had to phone finance to get answers to where it was. And but I think that if it was made clear, this might stop some of this from happening. But it's also a case of if somebody doesn't understand it, why can't they pick up the phone and ask somebody in the town instead of sticking it on brochures and slamming people that are volunteers in the community? Thank you. I
want you to know, Mr. Noble, that everybody at this table and all of our staff appreciate the volunteers. And I mean, I was just at a function last evening telling, I don't know how many people were there, 25 people or so, telling them how important volunteers are in this municipality and what a difference it makes in this municipality because we have the volunteers. And we couldn't do half the things we do if we didn't have all of the people. So I want you and all of the volunteers to know that we do appreciate you. You're important. We are in silly season right now. And I'm telling you that there are people coming out that are poison to this municipality, in my opinion. And it's a real shame because they're basically putting down the good work that the volunteers and the community do in this municipality, and what a shame. So we want you to know that you and all the other volunteers who do a lot of good things in this municipality are thankful, very thankful.
But going forward, I'd like to see it maybe next year's budget if it could just be a little broken down, because it might prevent this.
Well, it might. Can you tell me, Ms. Tollett, if we could have on the, you would have the expense, then could you have the revenue?
You, Madam Mayor. So in the budget, we do show up by location. We can certainly look at showing it a different way. That's why when we do the report in conjunction with Parks and Rec, when the Caledon Day finance summary, we do put the budget in there.
Right.
But they do have identified lines in the budget, so we can certainly show it differently in the budget document.
Yeah, sure. I think to solve your problem, or the problem, we should. Yeah. That would be good.
And okay. To speak to the revenue stream on it, we've gone through and... If you look at the expenses, we've cut the expenses down pretty well every year, and some of it is, the volunteers could do more, but because of liability reasons, we can't do everything. But we've brought more people, and we've cut the expenses down. I don't think anybody can look at it and say that there's any waste. I think I'm pretty cheap when it comes to some things, and
I agree.
Yeah. No, I've seen it, but it's, as I said, for the amount of people there, and we have, I think, cut the expenses down, there's a good, what I call, template now going forward. And we've looked at, you know, different areas of revenue streams, like the parking one 3 years ago didn't exist.
No.
And now it's one of our biggest revenue generators.
Right.
No, thank you for your time.
That's good. Thank you. And I know that some councillors have pushed their buttons, but in public question period, there isn't an opportunity in our bylaws for councillors to start engaging back and forth, so I am not going to recognize. Okay? Thank you. Okay. And
sorry, you're overruled. I think we'd be remiss before we adjourn this council meeting to recognize, not recognize Mayor Morrison. Many years of sitting at this table, wonderful leadership for council, for staff, for the whole town of Caledon. I'm going to try not to pull a councillor Mazzapelli and get teary, but it's happening anyway. Yeah, I think we really need to recognize her today, and I would join you in welcoming, joining me in a round of applause.
Carrie always has it. excuse me. Now, if you hadn't have done that, I was prepared to speak and just thank everyone. And now I'm not. But anyway, I would like to thank the staff very, very much for. Just a minute. I will get my composure. For the 20 years at this council table, and some of you have been here for the 20, it has been an absolute pleasure working with all of you. You have the most integrity. You have you're honest, you're straightforward, and I have thoroughly enjoyed every minute with you. I can tell you that. We haven't always agreed on everything, but that's good. That's democracy. And what I love is you bring your professional opinion to this council table and your professional expertise. And that's what we want. That's what we need. And don't ever let the politics enter into it. And you don't. And I love that. Because we, even though some people might think they're experts in everything, we're not experts. And we're here to bring a community view, not an expert in planning or parks and recreation or public works. And although I have said a few times, I know I'm not an expert, but, and then I give my opinion, but we aren't. And we rely on you, and we rely on your honesty and your professionalism. So please continue to give that. Don't ever stop giving that. And if the council disagrees with you, don't take it personally. It's because they've got other factors that are forcing them to do what they do. But don't take it personally. And council, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure working with you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I can tell you if I didn't, I would have quit a long time ago, or I would have retired a long time ago, because I always said that I would keep doing this as long as I'm enjoying it. I still enjoy about 90% of it, but it's just time. It's time. I think you know when it's time, and it's time for me. Thank you. Seconded by Councillor McClure that the following bylaws be read a first, second, third, and finally passed. Bylaw 2014-092 and 093. All those in favor? They're carried. I need a motion of adjournment. Councillor DeBoer, Councillor Mazzapelli, all those in favor? It's carried. Thank you very much, everyone.